Look to Windward. Cassette 10.
Kabe?
Said a distinctive voice from the Homomdan's terminal.
Yes, Tersono?
I have succeeded in persuading Zilla to return to his apartment. I think there's just the hint of a chance he might be wavering. On the other hand, I have just heard that Quillen is definitely going. Would you do me, all of us, the possibly incalculably enormous favor of coming here to help try and persuade Zilla to attend the concert nevertheless?
Are you sure I'd make any difference?
Of course not.
Just a moment.
Kabe and the Avatar stood just in front of the main stage. A few technician drones were floating about, and the orchestra were filing off stage after their final rehearsal. Kabe had watched, but hadn't wanted to hear. A trio of earplugs had fed him the sounds of a waterfall instead. The musicians, not all human, and some of them human but very unusual-looking, went back to their rest suite, doing a lot of muttering. They were troubled that one of Hub's avatars had conducted the rehearsal. It had done a creditable impression of Zilla, though without the short temper, bad language, and colourful curses. One might, Kabe thought, have imagined that the musicians would have preferred such an even-tempered conductor, but they seemed genuinely concerned that the composer might not be there for the real performance, to conduct the work himself.
Hub, Kabe said.
The silver-skinned creature turned to him. It was dressed very formally, in a severe grey suit. Yes, Kabe.
Could I get to Akeem and back in time to catch the start of the concert?
Easily, the machine said. Is Tersono looking for reinforcements on the Zilla front?
You guessed. It appears to believe I may be of assistance in persuading him to attend the concert.
It might even be right. I'll come too. Shall we underground it or take a plane?
A plane would be quicker?
Yes, it would. Displacing would be quickest.
I have never been displaced. Let's do that.
I have to draw your attention to the fact that a displace incurs an approximately 1 in 61 million chance of utter failure, resulting in death for the subject. The Avatar smiled wickedly. Still willing?
Certainly.
There was a pop, preceded by the briefest impression of a silver field disappearing alongside them, and another Avatar stood beside the one he'd been talking to, dressed similarly, but not identically. Kabe tapped his nose-ring terminal.
Tersono?
Yes, said the drone's voice.
The silver-skinned twins bowed fractionally to each other.
We're on our way.
Kabe experienced something he would later characterize as like having somebody else perform a blink for you. And as the Avatar's head rose back up after its brief bow, suddenly they were both standing in the main reception room of Zilla's apartment in Akeem City, where the drone E.H. Tersono was waiting. Chapter 16. Expiring Light. The late afternoon sun shone through a kilometer-high gap between the mountains and the cloud. Zilla came out of the bathroom, puffing his fur dry with a powerful little handheld blower. He frowned at Tersono and looked mildly surprised to see Kabe and the Avatar.
Hello, all. Still not going. Anything else?
He threw himself down onto a big couch and stretched out, rubbing the fluffed-up fur over his belly.
I took the liberty of asking our Ishluia and Hub here to attempt to reason with you one last time, Tersono said. There would still be ample time to get to the Stullion Bowl in a seemly manner, and...
Drone. I don't know what you don't understand, Zilla said, smiling. It's perfectly simple. If he goes, I don't.
Screen, please.
stallion bowl. A screen out-hollered burst into life across the whole of the wall on the other side of the room, protruding just beyond the furniture. The projection, filled with a couple of dozen views of the bowl, its surroundings, and various groups of people and talking heads. There was no sound. With the rehearsal finished, some enthusiasts could be seen already making their way into the giant amphitheatre. The drone swiveled its body quickly, jerking once, to indicate it was looking at first the avatar and then Kabe. When neither said anything, it said,
"Zilla, please."
"Tersono, you're in the way."
"Kabe, will you talk to him?"
"Certainly," Kabe said, nodding massively. "Zilla, how are you?"
"I'm well, thank you, Kabe."
"I thought you were moving a little awkwardly."
"I confess I am a little stiff. I was neck-jumping a Cussell's Janmandrasile earlier this morning, and it threw me."
"You are otherwise uninjured."
"Some bruises."
"I thought you disapproved of such activities."
"All the more so now."
"You wouldn't recommend it, then?"
"Certainly not for you, Kabe. If you neck-jumped a Cussell's Janmandrasile, you'd probably break its back."
"You are probably correct," Kabe chuckled. He put one hand to cup his chin. Cussell's Janmandrasiles. They're only found on..."
"Will you stop it?" screeched the drone. Its aura field burned white with anger. Kabe turned, blinking to the machine. He spread his arms wide, setting a chandelier tinkling.
"You said talk to him," he rumbled.
"Not about him making an exhibit of himself, indulging in some ridiculous so-called sport. I meant about going to the bowl, about conducting his own symphony."
"I did not make an exhibit of myself. I rode that giant beast for a good 100 meters.
"It was 60 at the most, and it was a hopeless neck jump," the drone said,
doing a good vocal impression of a human spitting with fury.
"It wasn't even a neck jump. It was a back jump, followed by an undignified scramble. Do that in a competition, and you'd get negative style marks."
"I still didn't..."
"You did make an exhibit of yourself," the machine shouted. "That simian in the trees by the river was Marel Pommyhecker, news feeder, gorilla journalist, media raptor, and all-round data hound. Look!"
The drone swept away from the screen and pointed a strobing grey field at one of the 24 rectangular projections protruding from the screen. It showed Zilla squatting on a branch, hiding up a tree in a jungle.
"Shit,"
Zilla said, looking aghast. The view cut to a large purple animal coming down a jungle path.
"Screen off," Zilla said.
The hollers disappeared. Zilla looked at the three others, brows furled.
"Well, I certainly can't go out in public now, can I?"
he said sarcastically to Tersono.
"Zilla, of course you can,"
Tersono yelped.
"Nobody cares you got thrown off some stupid animal."
Zilla looked at the avatar and the Homomdan and briefly crossed his eyes.
"Tersono would like me to try and argue you into attending the concert," Kabe told Zilla. "I doubt that anything I might say would change your mind."
Zilla nodded.
"If he goes, I stay here," he said.
He looked at the timepiece, standing on top of the antique mosaiki on a platform near the windows.
"Still over an hour."
He stretched out more fully and clasped his hands behind his head. He grimaced and brought his arms down again, massaging one shoulder.
"Actually, I doubt I could conduct anyway. Pulled a muscle, I think."
He lay back again.
"So, I imagine our Major Quillen is dressing now, yes?"
"He's dressed," the avatar said. "In fact, he's gone."
"Gone?"
Zilla asked. "Left for the bowl," the avatar said. "He's in a car right now. Already ordered his interval drinks."
Zilla looked briefly troubled, then brightened and said, "Ah!" The car was a large one, half full, crowded by local standards. At the far end, through a few embroidered hangings and a screen of plants, he could hear a group of young, all shouting and laughing. One calm adult voice sounded like its owner was trying to keep them in order. A child burst through the screen of plants, looking back the way it had come, almost tripping. It glanced round at the adults in this end of the car. It looked to be about to throw itself back through the plants again until it saw Quillen. Its eyes widened, and it walked over to sit beside him. Its pale face looked flushed, and it was breathing hard. Its dark, straight hair was plastered to its forehead with sweat.
"Hello," it said. "Are you Zilla?"
"No," Quillen said. "My name is Quillen."
"Geldred Chuasey,"
the child said, putting out its hand.
"How do you do?"
"How do you do?"
"Are you going to the festival?"
"No, I'm going to a concert."
"Ah, the one at the Stallion Bowl."
"Yes. And you? Are you going to the concert?" The child snorted derisively.
"No. There's a whole bunch of us. We're going round the orbital by car until we get bored. Kem wants to go round at least 3 times in a row because Ziddy's been round twice with his cousin, but I think twice is enough."
"Why do you want to go round the orbital?" Geldry Chuasey looked oddly at Quillen.
"Just for a laugh," it said,
as though it ought to be obvious. A gale of laughter burst through the screen of plants from the far end of the car. "Sounds very noisy," Quillen said.
"We're wrestling," the child explained. "Before that, we had a farting competition."
"Well, I'm not sorry I missed that." Another peal of high-pitched laughter rang down the car.
"I'd better get back," Geldry Chuasey said.
It patted his shoulder.
"Nice to meet you. Hope you enjoy the concert."
"Thank you.
Goodbye."
The child took a run at the screen of plants and jumped through between two of the clumps. There were more screams and laughs. "I know." "You know what?" "I can guess what you're thinking."
"Can you?"
"That they will probably still be in the underground car system when the hub is destroyed."
"Is that really what I was thinking?"
"It's what I'd be thinking. It is tough."
"Well, thank you for that."
"I'm sorry."
"We're all sorry."
The journey took a little longer than it would normally. There were a lot of people and cars stacking up to unload at the bowl's subsurface access points. In the lift, Quillen nodded to a few people who recognized him from the news service pieces he'd done. He saw one or two frowning at him, and guessed they knew that by coming, he was probably going to prevent Zilla from attending. He shifted on his seat and inspected an abstract painting hanging nearby. The lift arrived on the surface, and people walked out into a broad, open concourse beneath a colonnade of tall, straight-trunked trees. Soft lights shone against the dark blue of the evening sky. Smells of food filled the air, and people thronged cafes, bars, and restaurants at the sides of the concourse. The bowl filled the sky at the end of the broad way, studded with lights.
"Major Quillen!"
A tall, handsome man in a bright coat shouted, rushing up to him. He offered his hand, and Quillen shook it.
"Chongon Lissa, Lissa News. Usual affiliations, 40% take-up and rising."
"How do you do?" Quillen kept on walking. The tall male walked to one side and a little in front, keeping his head turned towards Quillen to maintain eye contact.
"I'm very well, Major. And I hope you are too. Major, is it true that Marai Zilla, the composer of tonight's symphony here at the Stallion Bowl, Guerno Plate Massac, has told you that if you attend the concert tonight, then he won't?"
"No."
"It's not true."
"He hasn't told me anything directly."
"But would it be correct to say that you must have heard that he wouldn't attend if you did?"
"That is correct."
And yet you have chosen to attend.
Yes.
Major Quillan, what is the nature of the dispute between you and Marai Zilla?
You would have to ask him that. I have no dispute with him.
You don't resent the fact that he's put you in this invidious position?
I don't think it is an invidious position.
Would you say that Marai Zilla is being petty or vindictive in any way?
No.
So would you say he's behaving perfectly reasonably?
I am not an expert on Marai Zilla's behaviour.
Do you understand people who say you're behaving very selfishly by coming here tonight, as that means Marai Zilla won't be here to conduct the first performance of his new work, so reducing the experience for everybody concerned?
Yes, I do. By now, they were near the end of the wide concourse, where what looked like a tall, broad wall of glowing glass extending over the breadth of the pavement was slowly, alternately brightening and dimming. The crowds thinned out a little beyond here. The barrier was a field wall, set up to admit only those who'd won out in the ticket lottery.
So you don't feel that...
Quillan had brought his ticket with him, though he'd been told it was really just a souvenir and not required for entry. Chongon Lissa obviously didn't have a ticket. He bumped softly into the glowing wall, and Quillan stepped around him and passed on through with a nod and a smile. "Good evening," he said. There were more news service people inside. He continued to answer politely but minimally, and just kept on walking, following his terminal's instructions, to his seat. Zilla watched the news feeds following Quillan with an open mouth.
"That son of a bitch! He's really going. He's not bluffing. He's actually going to take his seat and keep me away. From my own fucking concert. The stub-cocked son of a prey bitch!"
Zilla, Kabe, and the Avatar watched as several remotes followed Quillan to his seat, a specially prepared Chelgrian curl pad. There was a Homomdan seat next to it, a space for Tesono, and a few other seats and couches. The camera platform showed Quillan sitting, looking around at the slowly filling bowl, and calling up a function on his terminal which created a flat screen in front of him, holding the concert program notes.
"I think I see my seat," Kabe said thoughtfully.
"And I mine," Tersono said.
Its aura field looked agitated. It turned to face Zilla. Seemed about to say something, then did not. The Avatar did not move, but Kabe had the impression that there had been some communication between Hub Mind and the contact section drone. The Avatar folded its arms and walked across the room to look out at the city. A cold, clear, cobalt sky arched over the jagged surround of mountains. The machine could see the bubble that was Akeem's dome square. There was a giant screen there, relaying the scenes at the Stullion Bowl to a swelling crowd.
"I confess I didn't think he'd go," the Avatar said. "Well, he fucking has," Zilla said, spitting. "The puss-eyed bollock-dragger."
"I was under the impression he was going to spare you this too," Kabe said, squatting on the floor near Zilla. "Zilla, I'm most terribly sorry if I misled you in any way, even if it was inadvertently. I am still convinced that Quillan strongly implied he would not be going. I can only assume that something has changed his mind."
Again, Tersono seemed to be on the brink of saying something, its aura field altering and its casing rising a little in the air, and again it appeared to subside again at the last moment. Its field was grey with frustration. The Avatar turned from the window, arms still folded.
"Well, if you don't need me, Zilla, I'll be getting back to the bowl. Can't have too many ushers and general helpers at something like this. Always some cretin who's forgotten how to operate an automatic drinks dispenser. Kabe, Tosono, can I offer you a displace back?
Displace? Tosono said. Certainly not. I'll take a car.
The Avatar said. You should still make it. I wouldn't hang around, though.
Well, Tosono said hesitantly, fields flickering. Unless Kerzilla wants me to stay, of course.
They looked at Zilla, who was still watching the wall of screens. No, he said faintly, waving one hand. Go. Go, by all means.
No, I think I ought to stay, the drone said, floating closer to the Chelgrian.
And I think you ought to go, Zilla said sharply.
The drone stopped as though it had hit a wall. It flushed creamily rainbow with surprise and embarrassment, then bowed in the air and said,
Just so. Well, see you there. Yes. Goodbye.
It thrummed through the air to the doors, whisked them open, and closed them quickly but silently behind it. The Avatar looked quizzically at the Homomdan.
Kabe? Instantaneous travel appears to agree with me. I will be happy to accept.
He paused and looked at Zilla.
I, too, would be perfectly happy to stay here, Zilla. We don't have to watch the concert. We could...
Zilla leapt to his feet.
Fuck it, he said through his teeth. I'm going. That piece of wriggling vomit isn't going to keep me from my own fucking symphony. I'll go. I'll go and I'll conduct. And I'll even hang around and schmooze and be schmoozed at afterwards. But if that little turd Tosono or anybody else tries to introduce that selfish litterfucker Quillen to me, I swear I'll bite the shithead's throat out.
The Avatar suppressed most of a grin. Its eyes twinkled as it looked at Kabe. Well, that sounds eminently reasonable, don't you think, Kabe?
Absolutely.
I'll get dressed, Scylla said, bounding towards the internal doors. Won't take a moment.
We'll have to displace to give us enough time, the Avatar yelled.
Fine,
Zilla called out.
There's a 1 in 60... Yes, yes, I know. Let's just risk it, eh?
Kabe looked at the broadly smiling Avatar. He nodded. The Avatar held out its arms and gave a little bow. Kabe mimed applause.
You guessed wrong.
What about?
About how Zilla would jump. He's coming after all.
Is he? Even as he thought the question, Quillen became aware of people around him starting to mutter and heard the word Zilla mentioned a few times as the news spread. The bowl was mostly full now, a gigantic buzzing container of sound and light and people and machines. The brightly lit center, the empty stage where the various instruments glittered, looked still and silent and waiting, like the eye of a storm. Quillen tried not to think anything very much. He spent some time fiddling with the magnifying field built into his seat, adjusting it so that the stage area seemed to swell in front of him. When he was happy that, like everybody else, apart from the real no-magnification purists, he had what appeared to be a ringside seat, he sat back.
He is definitely on his way.
He's here. They're displaced.
Well, I tried.
You're probably worrying needlessly. I doubt anything will go so far wrong here that anybody is going to be in any real danger.
Quillen looked at the sky above the bowl. It was probably dark blue or violet, but it looked pitch black beyond the vague haze of the bowl's rim lights.
There are several 100,000 lumps of rock and ice heading straight this way, converging on the sky above this place. I wouldn't be too sure this is safe.
Oh, come on. You know what they're like. They'll have backups on the backups. Octuple redundancy. Safety to the point of paranoia.
We'll see. Another thing occurred to me.
What?
Supposing our allies, whoever they might be, have made their own plans for what's really going to happen when they trigger their surprise.
Go on.
As I understand it, there's no limit to what you could squeeze through the wormhole's mouth. Supposing instead of just enough energy to destroy the hub, they put through enough to annihilate it. Suppose they shoot an equivalent mass of antimatter through the hole. How much does the hub unit weigh?
About 1,000,000 tons.
A 2,000,000-ton matter stroke antimatter explosion would kill everybody on the orbital, wouldn't it?
I suppose it would. But why would our allies, like you say, whoever they might be, want to kill everybody?
I don't know. The point is that it would be possible. You and I have no idea what our masters have agreed to. And from what we've been told, they too might have been deceived. We are at the mercy of these alien allies.
You're worrying too much, Quill.
Quillan watched the orchestra begin to take to the stage. The air filled with applause. It was not the full orchestra, and Zilla would not appear yet because the first piece was not one of his. But even so, the reception was tumultuous. Maybe. I suppose it doesn't matter much anyway. Not anymore. He saw the Homomdan Kabe Ishloir and the drone E.H. Tersono appearing from the nearest access way as the lights began to dim. Kabe waved. Quillan waved back. Tersono, we're going to blow up the hub. The words formed in his mind. He would stand up and shout them. But he did not. I didn't intervene. You never meant to really do it.
Really?
Really. Fascinating. Every philosopher should experience this. Don't you think, Hyla?
Easy, son. Easy.
Kabe and Tersono joined the Chelgrian. Both noticed he was weeping quietly, but thought it polite not to say anything. The music rang round the auditorium, a vast invisible clapper in the inverted bell of the bowl. The stadium's lights had sunk to darkness. The light show in the skies above flickered, flowed, and flashed. Quillan had missed the nacreous clouds. He saw the aurorae, the lasers, the induced layers and levels of clouds, the flashes of the first few meteorites, the strobing lines that hatched the sky as more and more streaked in. The distant skies all around the bowl, way out over the plains bordering the lake, coruscated with silent horizontal lightning, darting from cloud to cloud in streaks and bars and sheets of blue-white light. The music accumulated. Each piece, he realized, was slowly contributing to the whole. Whether it was Hub's idea or Zilla's, he didn't know, but the whole evening, the entire concert program, had been designed around the final symphony. The earlier, shorter pieces were half by Zilla, half by other composers. They alternated, and it became clear that the styles were quite different too. While the musical philosophies behind the two competing strands were dissimilar to the point of antipathy. The short pauses between each piece, during which the orchestra enlarged and decreased according to the requirements of each work, allowed just sufficient time for the strategic structure of the evening to filter through to people. You could actually hear the coin drop as people worked it out. The evening was the war. The two strands of music represented the protagonists, culture and ideerons. Each pair of antagonistic pieces stood for one of the many small but increasingly bitter and wide-scale skirmishes which had taken place, usually between proxy forces for both sides,
during the decades before the war itself had finally broken out. The works increased in length, and in the sensation of mutual hostility. Quillan found himself checking the history of the Iderian War to confirm that what felt like they ought to be the final pair of preparatory pieces really were so. The music died away. The applause was barely audible, as though everybody was simply waiting. The complete orchestra filled the central stage. Dancers, most in float harnesses, distributed themselves about the space around the stage in a semi-sphere. Zilla took his place at the very focus of the circular stage, surrounded by a shimmer of projection field. The applause zoomed suddenly, then dropped as quickly away. The orchestra and Zilla shared a mutual moment of silence and stillness. A blanking field somewhere in the heavens above blinked off, and up near one edge of the bowl's lip, it was as though the first nova Portitia had just appeared from behind a cloud. The symphony Expiring Light began with a susurration that built and engorged until it burst into a single, clashingly discordant blast of music. A mixture of chords and sheer noise that was echoed in the sky by a single, shockingly bright airburst, as a huge meteorite plunged into the atmosphere directly above the bowl and exploded. Its stunning, frightening, bone-rattlingly loud sound arrived suddenly in a hypnotic lull in the music, making everybody, certainly everybody that Quillan was aware of, including himself, jump. Thunder rippled round the greater amphitheatre of sky around the lake and bowl at its centre. The bolts struck earth now, lancing to the distant ground. The sky hatched with squadrons and fleets of darting meteorite trails, while the folds of aurorae and sky-wide effects, whose origin it was hard to guess at, filled the mind and beat at the eye, even as the music pounded at the ear. Visuals of the war and more abstract images filled the air directly above the stage and the whirling, tumbling, interlacing bodies of the dancers. Somewhere near the furious center of the work, while the thunder played bass and the music rolled over it and around the auditorium like something wild and caged and desperate to escape, 8 trails in the sky did not end in airbursts and did not fade away, but slammed down into the lake all around the bowl, creating 8 tall and sudden geysers of lit white water that burst out of the still dark waters as though 8 vast undersurface fingers had made a sudden grab at the sky itself. Quillan thought he heard people shriek. The entire bowl, the whole kilometre diameter of it, shook and quivered as the waves created by the lake strike smashed into the giant vessel. The music seemed to take the fear and terror and violence of the moment and run screaming away with it, pulling the audience behind like an unseated rider caught in the stirrup of their panic-stricken mount. A terrible calmness settled over Quillan as he sat there, half cowering, battered by the music, assailed by the washes and spikes of light. It was as though his eyes formed a sort of twin tunnel in his skull, and his soul was gradually falling away from that shared window to the universe, falling on his back forever down a deep, dark corridor, while the world shrank to a little circle of light and dark somewhere in the shadows above. Like falling into a black hole, he thought to himself. Or maybe it was Hyler. He really did seem to be falling. He really did seem to be unable to stop. The universe, the world, the bowl, really did seem to be unreachably distant. He felt vaguely upset that he was missing the rest of the concert, the conclusion of the symphony. What price clarity and proximity, though?
and where lay the relevance of being there and using or not using a magnification screen or amplification, when everything he'd seen so far had been distorted by the tears in his eyes, and all he'd heard had been drowned out by the clamour of his guilt at what he had done, what he had made possible, and what was surely going to happen. He wondered, as he fell into that encompassing darkness, and the world was reduced to a single, not especially bright point of light above, no more luminous than a nova distant by most of 1,000 years, if he'd somehow been fed a drug. He supposed the culture people would all be enhancing the experience with their glanded secretions, making the reality of the experience both more and less real. He landed with a bump. He sat up and looked around. He saw a distant light to one side. Again, not particularly bright. He got to his feet. The floor was warm, and with just a hint of pliancy. There was no smell, no sound, except his own breathing and heartbeat. He looked up. Nothing. Hyla? He waited for a moment, then a moment longer. Hyla? Hyla? Nothing. He stood and gloried in the silence for a while, then walked towards the distant glow. The light came from the band of the orbital. He walked into what looked just like the mock-up of the hub's viewing gallery. The place seemed to be deserted. The orbital spun around him with a vast, implicit unhurriedness. He walked on a little, past couches and seats, until he came to the one that was occupied. The avatar, lit by the reflected light of the orbital's surface, looked up as he approached and patted the curl seat next to it. The creature was dressed in a dark grey suit. Quillen, it said. Thank you for coming. Please, sit down. The reflections slid off its perfect silver skin like liquid light. He sat down. The curl seat fitted perfectly. What am I doing here? He asked. His voice sounded strange. There were no echoes, he realized. I thought we should talk, the avatar said. What about? What we're going to do. I don't understand. The avatar held up a tiny thing like a jewel, grasping it in a pincer of silver fingers. It glittered like a diamond. At its heart was a tiny floor of darkness. Look what I found, Major. He did not know what to say. After what seemed like a long time, he thought, Hyla? The moment went on. Time seemed to have stopped. The avatar could sit perfectly, utterly, inhumanly still. There were three, he told it. The avatar smiled thinly, reached into the top pocket of the suit, and produced another two of the jewels. Yes, I know. Thank you for that. I had a partner. The guy in your head? So we thought. I have failed, then, haven't I? Yes. But there is a consolation prize. What is that? Tell you later. What happens now? We listen to the end of the symphony. It held out one slim silver hand. Take my hand. He took its hand. He was back in the Stollian bowl, but this time everywhere. He looked straight down. He watched from 1,000 other angles. He was the stadium itself, its lights and sounds and very structure. At the same time, He could see everywhere around the bowl, into the sky, out to the horizon, all around. He experienced a long moment of terrifying vertigo. Vertigo which seemed to be pulling him not down, but in every direction at once. He would fly apart. He would simply dissolve. "Stick with it," the Avatar's hollow voice said.
"I'm trying to."
The music and the sights swamped him, overwhelmed him, ran him through with light. The symphony rolled onwards, approaching a sequence of resolutions and cadenzas that were a small yet still titanic reflection of the whole work, the rest of the earlier concert, the war itself.
"Those things I displaced, they are..."
"I know what they are. They've been taken care of."
"I'm sorry."
"I know that." The music rose like the bulging bruise of water from an undersea explosion, an instant before the smooth swell ruptures and the spout of white spray bursts forth. The dancers rose and fell, swirled and flocked and spread and shrank. Images of war strobed above the stage. The skies filled with light, flickering, staggeringly brief shadows that were obliterated almost instantly by the next detonation in the vast bombardment of fire. Then all fell away, and Quillan sensed time itself slow down. The music faded to a single hanging line of keening ache. The dancers lay like fallen leaves scattered about the stage. The holler above the stage vanished, and the light seemed to evaporate from the sky, leaving a darkness that pulled at the senses, as though the vacuum was calling to his soul. Time slowed still further. In the sky, near the tiny remaining light that was the Nova Porticia, there was just the merest hint of something flickering. Then that stopped, held, frozen, too. The moment that was now, that for all his life had been a point, became that line, that long note of music and that drawing suff of black. From the line extended a plane, which folded and folded, until there was space for the viewing gallery again. And there he sat, still holding the hand of the silver-skinned Avatar. He looked into himself and realized that he felt no fear, no despair, and no regret.
This ends side one of cassette 10.